system. I find you in the shows and moving are great. And being a nerd, there's sign systems everywhere you go.
Oh, PJ has a beard. That's the theme song.
I have such a big beard that you can hear it. It was a involuntary beard. It was a lack of shaving beard, not a I'm trying to have a beard, if that makes
sense.
Some might say
if you shave the beard, it's a greater return on investment. ROI.
Which is funny. Funny you mention ROI. It's been a rough couple weeks.
Yeah, so this is another one of those timely episodes, not as exciting as the Figma acquisition episode, but design industry has been hit pretty hard. Our groups at Meta, Redfin, also Stripe, Twitter, and friends everywhere have been dealing with being let go. And one of the things that we wanted to loop back on, we talked about ROI in episode 8, was really trying to showcase your worth as an individual contributor, but then what is the ROI of your system and how can you continue beyond the initial steps of starting a system? How can you do this continuously and how can you, for lack of a better term, like future-proof your job and keep yourself safe and continue the good work that you love doing from day to day?
It may not be the most popular subject. It's not as fun, but I'm wondering if folks are a little bit more interested in this subject given the economic climate and what we're seeing in the industry. And it might be something we take for granted. I say it like sunnier days, but right now I think it's pretty critical.
Yeah, and without sharing anything that is not already public information, a lot of the teams that were impacted at Meta were teams that possibly we decided to pivot and possibly shrink. So some of the teams that may be in the reality labs, like a VR, AR space, were affected. Recruiting was affected. Other groups that unfortunately may not make as much in terms of revenue. The team that we're on that supports the ads and business products, the business design system, luckily we're on the positive end of this because we are supporting ads and business and we are one of the major drivers of revenue. So happy to be on there, but it's a continuous sort of search to see how can we support business objectives and OKRs of our design team. So that involves not only making sure that we're in lockstep with either our engineering teams in terms of product quality and how can we tick that up? How can we look at metrics like bounce rates, time on site, those sorts of things. But also, how can we help our consumers level up and make sure that we meet their specific metrics, which at our scale is a little tricky, I would say, because there's could be hundreds of feature teams that utilize this. But I think that's of utmost importance because it does show that we're really trying to future-proof ourselves. We're really trying to develop scalable components and scalable patterns and processes for all of these people. And what we were joking a little bit about before this was we don't want to just keep making things. That's not how the business sees as a positive thing. To business may not see that as a way of making money. Like, don't recreate the same stuff over and over. One thing to look at is possibly, and instead of creating new patterns, think about remixing these patterns and really trying to make this scalable for the next feature team to adopt.
That's the interesting challenge, right? Because it's easier. I think it's easier for folks to see, hey, we made this new thing, which is, quote, new value, which is supporting new goals. What can sometimes be harder for folks to understand is, hey, we made the thing. We're continuing to refine it and support it. But if you use that thing we already made in a new company goal, we're still supporting your company goal. The fact that when someone has a question, we're here to answer it. If there's a bug, we fix it. It's unit tested, it's accessible, all the rigor that goes to making that thing. Just because you don't create a new component or a new pattern for new goals does not mean you're not supporting those goals. And I think that's a really important thing to try to articulate, is that new doesn't necessarily mean support for new things. Maintenance of old things or existing things still translates to support for new things if they're using it. And so it goes back to, why are we making this thing? Do we need a new thing? Why don't we use what we already have, especially in lean times? Why create something new? And so that's a challenge that I'm trying to work through, to communicate that a design system is never done. The minute it's complete is the minute you are basically, it's on the downslide because you're not supporting it anymore, and people will stop using it or feel less confident in it. But not only that, value does not necessarily mean additional stuff. It means a better system, which sometimes has new components and sometimes it ain't.
Oh yeah, better supported stuff. And you mentioned things that maybe WCAG compliance. That's a good piece. Like you may get that out of the box if you use the system. Going back to episode 8, and around the 18-minute mark, we talked about just the idea of quantifying time and reducing design time. So if you were to say you could reduce designers' time by 30% by giving them a starting point, you could really get designers to think about more gnarly challenges. That's what you had said that episode. But it also allows you to think about things like edge cases, which you may not be able to jump on, from the initial run. Maybe some localization, maybe some content design. Maybe you could get some more stuff done there. Maybe you could get quicker time to market in terms of prototyping. Maybe you could prototype and test this faster if you're utilizing the system as well.
It's all those things. And I think going back to return on investment, I think the one thing that is critical during these times is to ensure that folks are using it. If they ain't using it, then the value of your system is suspect at best. Like, it's only valuable if folks use it. So in these times, really, really making certain that the system is used as much as humanly possible is pretty critical. Going into 2023, that's one of the top goals, is to increase adoption across the board. And so that will be most likely, that'll be a big pillar for you and your team to make the case for the value that you're bringing and the potential return on investment, because all of this kind of falls to shit, no pun intended, or I mean, pardon my French, whatever one of those, if folks aren't using it.
Yeah, the funny thing that I had mentioned, 31-minute point, 31:44 on episode 8 was the notion that I dealt with previously, that design leadership didn't give a shit about how many story points we've saved, and they didn't necessarily care about the time savings portion of it. So then when they don't care about that, you got to try to spin the new narrative. And that new narrative, like on our end right now, for Meta, what it could be money savings, could be product quality. It certainly is, like, velocity is already demonstrated, but if we could demonstrate that, like, we're going to be able to save money, we're going to be able to do this with less designers by just utilizing the system, I think that's a really good, in terms of these lean times, a very good place to start.
Yeah. And my guess is a lot of those companies that didn't care about time savings are going to really care about time savings now. So I think it's understanding the evolving language of love, or the evolving set of priorities that leadership's going through, because I don't necessarily think that what was important 6 months ago is going to be the same as now.
Yeah. The argument about the making cool shit. So, like, that's what a lot of feature designers want to do. They want to bypass us because they just want to make cool shit. They want to prototype cool shit. They want to be a little bespoke for the sake of putting their own footprint on that. So, wanted to talk through, in these times, right now when we're really trying to be a little leaner, cut back on headcount, and also just use what we have and evolve it. What would you say about designers with that sentiment?
I'd say, especially nowadays, it would behoove you to really prove out the business value of that cool shit. I wrote a while ago about delight and how I personally believe that is an overused term. And if you talk to individuals, they just want to do the thing. They just want to, they want to get in, get to what they want to get to, and accomplish that as clearly and as quickly as possible. And things like an icon animation or whatever, like motion treatment, while it's nice, it's not nicer than what they want to accomplish. And so if those things are getting in the way or stunting the core experience, the core thing that they want to do, you're putting yourself at risk, because that's going to eventually lead to poor business outcomes. And while the basics, the fundamentals are boring, it has been a universal law that fundamentals are always important, oftentimes overlooked, but usually one of the most important things to focus on. And so especially now, not that one should not do cool shit, but make sure the fundamentals are sound. Make sure the basics are legit before you move over to the land of delight or cool shit. Because without that foundation, it is risky at best.
Yeah, this is a good time to utilize the system as a starting point for testing and multivariate testing. I know there is a lot of sensitivity specifically on, I always use like Amazon product pages as an example. They're not the prettiest, but they're tuned to shit, right? Like they're tuned and they're optimized like to the T, and there's a lot of sensitivity towards any sort of movement in that interface. Because if you move a button, if you move the CTA 100 pixels down, that could impact revenue by X number of percent. So there's not a lot of changes to the naked eye you may notice, but they're tuning it all the time.
That's an interesting subject in and of itself, because micro tuning surface by surface becomes incredibly challenging to support at a systemic level. So that is an interesting topic altogether. But when you mention Amazon, the first thing I think of, because of our prior lives, is Amazon Prime Video, and how I would not necessarily consider that a delightful user experience. But folks use it. And why do they use it? Because it has the shows that they want. It goes back to, they want to do the thing. And what, for Amazon Prime, the thing is watching a video. And at the end of the day, that's their core need. And so looping back to the context of design systems, if you can leverage a system to develop that experience, focusing on the thing, whatever that thing is, as quickly as possible, to ensure that you've got that core experience solid, you're going to be in a much better place to add that delight on top of it with the strong foundation, theoretically, if it's a solid system, and the time saving that you've gained. But if you jump to cool shit first, it's problematic. So I think it's in the system's best interest for its own health to make sure that folks are using it. And beautifully, it's in designers and engineers' best interest for their team's health and success to use it. So right now we are very much tied at the hip and our fates are aligned, and it really does benefit both of us from a business standpoint to work together and to make sure that the system is meeting our customers' needs as effectively as possible, and that our customers are using it as effectively as possible.
Yeah, the product owner part of this involves a lot of, as you say, bean counting and really trying to track the tasks to a T. So really trying to track what we're doing, how are we creating impact, how can we tie this back to OKRs, but then on a continuous basis, how do we communicate these outcomes out, right? So if you know, you cut down a tree in a forest, right? Like what's the saying? Like you cut down a tree and no one hears it.
Did it ever really fall?
Yeah. No, it didn't, because no one heard it.
It's true, man. At least in the corporate world, it's true.
Yeah. So this is all about helping others, creating good case studies, And then you could report out the outcomes. Our partners that we help could be doing this, but really trying to do this on a continuous basis. So design leadership, maybe even above design leadership, those people make sure to see that we're out there and we're trying to create impact, and we're doing this work, or we're collaborating from a cross-functional standpoint, and people are utilizing the things, like we're solving and helping designers complete outcomes.
Yeah. The challenge we have, by we I mean design systems teams, is that our fates are very much in the hands of the customers. And so you can make all the things, but at the end of the day, we need folks to use them. And so that's the real challenge there. And also, it makes the communications difficult as well, because we can say that we supported a team to meet such a goal, but like, who gets the credit? Obviously, I personally think design systems teams should recede and give all the credit to the customers, because ultimately they're the ones driving the work. But we are supporting it. And so that, just from a measurement stance, becomes difficult to say, well, what percentage of credit should the system get for supporting this initiative? It becomes really tricky, and I don't have a good answer there. So what I like to fall back on is just pure adoption. But even that depends on teams using it. So it becomes really tricky to be in control of your own destiny in terms of proving out that value, because you really are depending on folks using the thing at the end of the day, which is a challenge.
Yeah, the stats are a little fuzzy as well. So we can measure this qualitatively via sentiment surveys or the system usability survey, which I mentioned before. But then you could just look into the data and see insertions, possibly, or you could look into possibly code, how many times this has been inserted as well. You could look at either one of those lenses. But it's a little fuzzy, because it's at the end of the day, like we had this conversation last week when I was on a on-site for our team, is that we're infrastructure team, and let's, you know, be real, like these patterns are created by us, but it's more of a facilitation and a workshopping with the feature designers. The feature designers, as you say, should get the shine for creating these patterns, testing them. We ensure that these patterns are scalable.
Exactly. And I do think there is just a level of qualitative assessment that needs to go on. I immediately think of sports, and I know that's not a popular topic within the design org, but football is a really good example of this, where you have wide receivers, running backs, quarterbacks. They all have a ton of statistics and objective measurements as to whether they're doing well. Offensive linemen don't as much, but nothing happens. Like, if there aren't offensive linemen protecting those people, none of it happens. They're always the ones that get blamed when things go wrong. They never get the praise when things go well. It's always like, oh, that running back, that quarterback did such a good job. But they are the bedrock. They're the foundation of how everything works. And so just because you can't measure something with a number doesn't mean that it doesn't have value. And that is a challenging thing, a challenging place to be, because obviously having a number to denote your worth is a lot. When we're talking about ROI, right? Like, it's the whole notion of being able to measure value. And so it becomes tricky. And so what I'm not suggesting is to throw your arms up and say, well, you know, we can't measure anything, so I'm not going to do anything. It's more of just finding creative ways to measure that value and leaning into what can be an ambiguous subject of how to measure that value. We took it in our own hands regarding adoption. We built out our own infrastructure to measure design adoption within Figma through a year-long effort to actually leverage the Figma API and build out tooling to analyze frames and determine how many Gestalt components are being used, because we just don't want to be at the mercy of, well, we think people are using it, or, well, Figma Stats kind of gives us some numbers, but not really. We just took it in our own hands to get a more objective measurement of that. But that also takes time and investment away from actually building out the system. So there's risk in and of itself by doing that.
And then people, specifically design leaders or engineering leaders, do like to ask us, like, why are you focusing on XYZ this half? And that having something like this, would you'd be able to see, oh, it's because this component has been detached hundreds of times, and it's not doing what it's supposed to be doing. It's not functionally as intended in terms of a designer's point of view. And also, we've been getting X amount of requests in Slack or in workplace, like our internal Slack, and you're able to, from a back of a napkin, at least draw that story. And there's, I've always tried to speak about trust and user trust, and we are very focused on that from a customer, like a Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp user point of view, product integrity and trust. But there's also on the flip side, product designer trust. And the only way to measure that other than this is just by sentiment. And if you're able to capture that and then show increases or decreases, you're able to tell that story. And another mechanism that we've utilized also is just talking to whomever is on the data team and asking them just very bluntly, what are we collecting? Right? What can, from your point of view, what can we improve and what do we have issues with? And they're more than happy to go through and explain what we're measuring, what we're looking to measure, and different pitfalls of what we're doing at the moment.
Those surveys become all the more important during these times because you need every little ounce of justification for the work that you're doing and the movement that you're seeing. So I think this is another gentle nudge that if you don't have a regular survey that you're sending out to your customers, now's a really good time. We just closed our survey out and got the results back, and it was immensely positive. And that is helping us make the case that, hey, this plan that we've had is progressing. This is what we're seeing. This is what we expect in the next half based off of these results. So back to the, in the absence of pure objective direct numbers, those sorts of things start to help fill in the gaps, which is all the more important.
Yeah, on timestamp 1350 in episode 8, you also talked about connecting the dots. And I call it being in the hub and spoke. We are a hub and spoke model. We are in the center of all of this. While we don't design all the patterns, our team is best suited to have the best understanding of all patterns. I think being in the hub and spoke model, we should continuously push that that idea forward and make sure that design leadership understands that, that we are, for better or for worse, see all in terms of design that is going everywhere. And we should be invited to help chip in wherever we can. So we don't always need to just say that we're focusing on the top products. But if you have an idea that you want to proof out, that you have a good business objective that's tied to it, let us help get you started.
That goes back to trust, though. If the teams don't trust you, they ain't going to involve you in the process. And so that is why it's so important to have a strong rapport with those teams and that they trust that you're going to support them, is that without that open door, you're not going to be able to connect all the dots there. And so all these things are, it's a system in and of itself. All these things are connected. And so getting those relationships, getting those trusts, those points of trust are really important. And if it's not you, find someone on the team. Like, don't let your ego get in the way. You may not be the most trustworthy person within the company. And I don't mean that in some weird way, but like, people may not know you enough or they may not vibe with you. It doesn't matter. Find the person on your team that trust does exist and get them to build those connections, because that's all that matters. And it actually goes to one other topic, which is how you want to spend your capital. If adoption is critical, you may need to let go of some disagreements and be willing to flex your idea of what's the ideal treatment for the system to get folks to adopt it. It's A, everything can evolve, so it doesn't have to stay that way forever. But B, at the end of the day, if you are trying to prove out value, you may just have to compromise on some things and meet people where they're at to both A, build trust, and B, show that folks are using your system. And a lot of this is ego squelching, not unwisely spending capital, and being very strategic of when and how you push on things in the right areas.
I think I saw this on LinkedIn, but I don't remember whom said this, so I cannot attribute you. I apologize. Or maybe I don't, because this is going to be a novel idea for us now. But maybe the shift is don't add any more colors, don't add any more type, and we need to shift our focus to the system is flexible, so we can support new type sizes and new colors. If you do it in this fashion, we could facilitate this for you. And the shift is moving away from just a strict no, because if you're thinking about this from like a design token standpoint, what's another token? Nothing, right? It's as long as it maps and semantically it works with the rest of the system, it's not a big deal. But we've historically pushed back quite a bit when we're adding new sizes and adding new colors, because we're just afraid that it's a huge exercise in design debt.
Yeah. And it is, right? But in those situations, trying to, A, that design debt may be worth it. You don't know, right? It may lead to untold value. But B, if that's going to get in the way of folks using the system, chances are it's not worth dying on that hill. The other value of software is anything can change at any time. So you can always, while it's difficult to pull things out of software, of systems, it's not impossible. So these things are not immutable choices that can never change. So yeah, just be careful, right? Like it's these things are typically a compromise. It's not just about your ideas or your team's ideas. It's making sure that you have some vibe with with the customers, right? So it's going to be really important. And sometimes short-term debt to get to a better place is what's necessary.
Yeah, on episode 8, at timestamp 27, we talked about the notion of just throwing people at the problem, which unfortunately, where we are today is part of, you know, the nature of what's happened. And we've historically as leadership just spun up teams, thrown designers at specific features, and what we may or may not have thought about, is this the right team to do this? Do we need this many resources? And hopefully being on the design system team, we could help you do more with less. That's like kind of the whole shtick, right?
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how teams who have historically thrown people at problems throughout the course of the company's history adjust to constraint. I fear it's going to be painful, because it's just a different way of working, and it could be pretty rough to get to that point of working within constraints, working within limited headcount, limited timelines, limited scope. Not that teams aren't doing that already, but it's just at a more exaggerated level. It'll be interesting to see how that evolves. And you know, a lot of systems teams are typically underfunded, right? So a lot of these teams are already battle tested because they've been working with a skeleton crew already. So like our team, we've done it. We will figure it out if and when. I'm not assuming that there's going to be headcount adjustments, but if so, we'll find a way to make it work. And so I think a lot of the themes of 2023 are going to be how to be creative with constraint, and how to work with limitations and still come out with ideal outcomes.
Yeah, ideal and positive, like positive outcomes or learnings, even if the outcomes were not necessarily as positive as you may have thought. And we haven't talked all that much about agile, That was a big thing, I think, 10 years ago, everyone talking about agile, balanced teams, that sort of thing. But we have to think a little more agile and release things in smaller chunks and not hold stuff back and release it all at once at the end of the half. And think about what we could release in maybe one sprint, two sprints, a quarter. That's pretty feasible.
This is another podcast episode, but I must be the odd duck because I think agile is great. I think it's a huge risk reduction. I think it forces you to think in iterative steps and learn and adjust and be nimble. And when I look around, designers hate agile. And so I'm obviously out of the loop here, but I think it's a tough practice at first, but when you get in the vibe, when you get in that flow, I love it. It also forces you to not be too attached to anything because you're getting something out there quickly. You're going to learn, it's going to change. And so you take a less precious approach to the solutions that you're putting together. That's another podcast altogether, but I do foresee more agile methodologies in 2023 among teams.
Oh man, you scared me. The look on your face, I thought you were going to say, no. Well, how do we do agile? We have to make sure that everything is perfect and the product quality is there.
David, it needs to be perfect.
So you got to spend your whatever, how many hours is in a year, you know, minus PTO. You have to spend all this time after 1 year, then we could emerge from the depths of the Pinterest offices and showcase.
Doves will fly. They'll emerge from the air and...
Blue angels will fly by, you know, hit the doves.
Perfect drives me nuts. It really does drive me nuts because there's no such thing. And B, I've seen so many projects in the spirit of perfection just miss hilariously because just the baseline fundamental idea was flawed. So they were polishing up a turd But again, I am obviously the weird one within the design org about this.
Yeah. I think agile or maybe project planning is another good episode. And much like we used to do, we always find good episodes for future podcasts at the very end of an episode. So we've hit over 30 minutes. Woo! Thank you so much, PJ. Keep your head up, keep positive, and stay safe out there.
Yeah, same to you, man.